saying you own a home improvement company, and you have the option of, you can increase your closing percentage by 10%. I'm going to be the genie in the bottle, and I'm going to grant you this gift. Or the genie says to you, no, your closing percentage is going to stay the same at 30%, but we're going to raise your prices by 10%. You're still going to close 30%, but your price is increased by 10%. Which one do you want?
All day long, I'll take number two. All day long.
But I would submit to you that not everybody knows how to answer that question. The answer to that question is right there on your P&L every month.
Have you ever felt like there's a secret club of successful contractors and you're left outside? Want in? Well, you just found the entry door. Welcome to the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Each episode, we pull back the curtain, revealing the stories, strategies, and secrets that top leaders use to grow their home improvement business and enjoy more success, more wealth, and more freedom. Discover more at thewealthycontractor.com. Now let's get into today's episode.
All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Today, I have with me Mark Curry from Revelair Home. Welcome, Mark. Glad you're here.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Yep, he's back again. So for those of you that aren't familiar, Mark has been here a few times. Mark and I, our relationship goes back at least 10 years, maybe a little bit more. And in recent years, Mark and I have been very busy together. A few years back, I asked Mark to do a presentation at Accelerate Live on profitability. And long story short, because it's a little bit of a story, but I asked him to do a presentation. That presentation was so well received because, you know, I've been screaming from the rooftops for the last 10 years about focusing on profitability, focus on profitability. And here's a guy that has been successful in this industry for decades. I don't know if you want to admit how many, Mark, but has been successful in this industry for decades. He explains profit in a way where I think most of us can understand it and get it. And as a result, we created a profit workshop, and we've got our fourth one coming up in September. I'll talk a little bit more about that later, but that profit workshop has been so well received over the years. Mark goes very deep on the mechanics of profitability, which is incredible. And we're going to talk a little bit about why that's so important. And we've recently got together and started to offer a profit advisory service. It's called the Profit Masters. And we'll probably chat a little bit about that a little bit later too. But basically, our goal is together and separately is to help you guys, as many of you as possible, make the money you deserve to make from this business. This is not an easy business. You work hard. And if you're doing right by your customer, you deserve to earn a very healthy profit. So with all of that said, Mark, let's kind of jump in. And so let me start by asking you this. So you have, you know, decades of experience. I'm going to say nearly four decades of experience in this industry. Based on all of what you've seen from a, I guess, from a top level perspective, what would you say is the key indicator of a successful and sustainable business versus a business that's just grinding it out every day just to survive?
Brian, where my mind goes is the first to state to you what it doesn't look like. And that is the essentially bust the myth, if you will, of working hard. The guy that works the hard is the guy that's going to, you know, or gal that's going to get across the finish line. So I don't really support that theory. I'd be more from the school of thought that of working smart as opposed to working hard, right? And don't get me wrong. I mean, you got to put the time in and work your tail end off, especially when you're in a growth mode or you're a startup operation. But the prevailing thought should always be one of working smart versus working hard. Now, everybody's heard that. I don't think there's going to be anybody in the audience that's going to dispute that topic. But when you break it down, everybody starts wondering, well, what does working smart look like? You know, how do you define working smart? Does that mean you have to have a business degree from Harvard? I look at it in a simplistic manner of thinking that working smart, really the word smart, is based on the decisions that you make, what decisions you make, whether your life, my life, anybody's life, is all a compilation of decisions. The quality of life we live is all based on the decisions that we make. Good decisions, bad decisions. So then, if you look at it from a business standpoint, the business that anybody listening to this podcast has is the business that they deserve to have based on the decisions that they made operationally and strategically, period.
Okay. And so based on that, how do you go about making right decisions versus making, dare I say, bad decisions?
I would look at it as there's three categories of decision makers, right? Again, just trying to keep it in simple terms. And these are just generalizations. The one category I think a lot of some people can relate to is what I call the knee-jerk reactors. These are people who have a degree of ADD, some attention deficit disorder, a real sense of urgency, which is a good quality, but they more so pride themselves in having a gut instinct and being able to read situations, and they act very quickly oftentimes. And oftentimes they're driving themselves right over the ledge, not even knowing it. Right? So they're very decisive. That's for sure. They're moving quickly. They're not immobile, but they could be a bit careless. The second category is just the opposite of that. These are the people who, ironically, once they make up their mind, they're full of indecision, right? So they're ridden with a degree of anxiety. They're making their decisions with their fingers crossed behind their back and always, having a degree of fear or doubt. And that tends to keep them very immobile. And worse yet, they typically do not, with a measure of resolve, get behind their own decisions in terms of execution. The third category would be what I would call the resourceful decision makers. And that's usually the people that are making the best decisions. And I say resourceful, meaning they're going to use all the resources that are available to them to gather enough information, right? And I'm not talking about a plethora of information to get paralysis through analysis, but just relevant information to be able to put the odds in their favor of making a good decision. And then they execute accordingly. So the key to gathering information, having the right data, if you will, the information to put the odds in your favor.
Where does all that come from? So where do you get the resources? Where do you get the information that you need in order to make the right decisions?
Yeah. So as it relates to our industry, right, successful business owners as I do, and oftentimes the question that's being asked of us is, hey, what's your secret sauce? If there's any one or two things you could tell me to help me be successful in this industry, what might it be? And usually the standard response is in some form after you boil it all down is, well, you got to know your numbers. You got to be able to track your numbers. And although that is true, and I can't imagine running a business without tracking your numbers, it still leaves the person who asks that question wondering, well, what numbers do I track? And for the most part, there's a lot of people that will, business owners are thinking, man, that leaves me with nothing to go on because I already track my numbers, right? So the vast majority of companies in our industry would be tracking numbers, KPIs, right? KPI reports or key performance indicators, such as, just to go through the cycle of the sale, what's the cost of a raw lead? The raw lead conversion from a raw inbound lead to a set, which is set rate. From your set appointments to a confirmation to qualify those appointments before you issue, what's that percentage look like? After a lead is confirmed, what percentage of those get issued out to the street, to the salesperson? How many of those turn into a demo, your demo rate percentage? How many of those close? What's your closing percentage? What is your cancellation percentage? What percentage of lending turndowns or bank declines do you have? All right. How many mismeasures are your measure technicians having? What's your cycle time on a particular product? So these are all typical examples of KPI reports that are used to measure, you know, different type of criteria in the business. But I would submit to all the people listening to this that are doing that, that's not enough. That's nowhere near enough.
I was going to ask you something else, but now go on and what else? If that's not enough, what else?
Well, because all those KPI reports, you know, however many there were that I just listed, you know, 10, 12 different metrics to look at. Most business owners are going to be having, I would imagine, any reasonable business owner is going to be having these staff meetings once a week, perhaps, or however often, where you're going to be reviewing those departmental KPIs, because everything I just covered a moment ago, these are departmental KPIs for your marketing department, your sales department, your production department. So you have these staff meetings with your key staff members in attendance. Some companies will refer to that as a BPR, a business plan review. If you follow EOS, you would call that a level 10 meeting. And that owner is essentially listing and holding accountable each department head with regards to their KPIs. But it does beg the obvious question, right? The white elephant in the room, as they say, is what is the owner's KPI report? These key performance indicators are essentially a report card or a scorecard. And what is the ultimate scorecard for any business owner? And that is the P&L, what's called the profit and loss statement. There's actually two reports, financial reports or report cards for the owner. The one is a balance sheet, right? So, you know, what is a balance sheet? You know, it's not a P&L. A balance sheet tells you what your financial health is in that business. It's like your blood pressure reading for the company. And also known as the silent killer, meaning this, right? Just to keep it real simple. The balance sheet will tell you essentially how much cash you got in the bank and how much of that cash belongs to you and how much of that cash does not belong to you, which is accounts payable for bills that you have to pay, as well as customer deposits, where people entrusted you with these monies as a deposit, a down payment, you know, for their windows, roofing, siding, kitchens, what have you. And yet, if you're not looking at that balance sheet, and we see this happen all the time, owners are just in a very willy-nilly fashion taking withdrawals, all right, distributions from their business, not knowing what's theirs and what isn't theirs. And ultimately, what we see happen within like 2 months' time, these owners are having cash flow problems. So that's the essence of what a balance sheet does for you. Quite important. The other one is your profit and loss statement that you mentioned, right? So that's the compilation. That report card is a compilation of all those other KPIs in your marketing, in your sales, your closing percentage, your production, cycle time, what have you, your mismeasures, your customer settlements. All that is realized on this thing called a profit and loss statement, which incidentally, most owners will think, in our industry as well as just about any industry, think that this P&L thing is like a year-end report that your tax accountant pulls just for the purposes of telling you how much you owe in way of taxes. That's not what it is. The technical term for a profit and loss statement is called an operating statement, which is a management tool for any business in any industry, for a chief operating officer or for a CEO or president to use. That is their one key indicator or report that they use to make essentially all their operational decisions pertaining to a business, right? Yet, interesting enough, in our industry, this is as viable and fruitful as it is. This is an area that we really come up short by and large with business owners not really understanding how to read or how to organize and set up a profit and loss statement. So maybe expound on this a little bit. I'll use an analogy that it's better shown through like a visual illustration, but let me try to run this by you. All right. I want you to imagine that there's three cars, Brian. And the objective is there's going to be a race. It's going to start Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. That's a starting point. The finish line is in Santa Barbara, California, on the West Coast. All right, so the objective here is you got business car one, business car two, and business car three. Whoever gets to Santa Monica on the West Coast first in the shortest amount of time wins the race and constitutes as having the most successful business. Now, you need to pick, based on certain criteria that I give to you, Brian, you need to pick which car you're going to bet on. Business car one, two, or three, right? So here's the criteria. Business car one is the fastest car out of the three of them. It's got a lot of talent, very, very quick. Not only that, but the driver is a graduate of Harvard Business School. Car number two, business car two, is not as fast as car one, but the driver is Mario Andretti. A lot of experience. Knows how to handle a car, even though he doesn't have the fastest car. Business car number three is the slowest car of them all. And the driver simply has a high school education, right? Whereas like Brian Cascavassian, who's never driven in the snow before.
That's right.
That's car number three. Now, I submit that to you as a criteria. Which business car are you going to pick to win the race and have the most successful business?
Well, I don't know yet. Don't I need to know a few more things about the car?
All other criteria is the same. Same gas mileage, same amount of fuel, everything else being equal across the board. No trick question. Now, I would submit to you that most people would pick either car number one or two.
Yeah.
They're going to pick either the fastest car with the Harvard graduate driver or the average speed car with a great driver like Mario Andretti. But they're not going to pick car number three.
Yeah.
I mean, a guy with a high school degree and he's driving a Hyundai, all right? Nobody's going to pick car number three, with all other criteria being the same. But let me just change one piece of criteria and ask the question again of you. Car number one and two, all right? You remember what those cars are? The fastest car and the other car has Mario Andretti. But they don't have a GPS. They don't even have a roadmap. The only way they get from the East Coast to the West Coast is looking what direction the sun is rising and setting, all right? And they head west towards the California coastline.
Yeah.
But the high school graduate in car number three driving the Hyundai, he's got a GPS, a global positioning system. You know, he's got Waze telling him where the traffic jams are. He's got Google Maps, all that. That's his roadmap. Now, with that criteria, who are you going to bet on to win the race?
Taking number three.
Number three all day long.
Yeah.
Average guy in an average car, but he's got the profit and loss statement. He's got the roadmap.
Yeah.
That tells him how to get across that finish line quickly and efficiently.
Yeah.
And that is what's missing from our industry.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I can't imagine running the race or being in this business without having that kind of a GPS.
Well, and, you know, from our experience running these workshops, it really is, you know, when we do surveys ahead of time, because we want to kind of understand where people are in the room. And one of the questions we ask them is, do you get a P&L every month by the 10th or the 15th of the month? And it's shocking to me that it's only about half of the people that we've surveyed get this document. And then again, from our experience, we know the half that do get the document, a good half of those or 80% of those, these P&Ls, you can't trust because they're either cash accounting, not accrual, and they kind of don't make sense. Stuff is out of order. You know, the way we set them up, you know, your model is we're looking at seven main buckets. But for example, you take advertising, and you say this all the time, people will take marketing advertising and it comes in order, in alphabetical order in QuickBooks. And so we've got some money in advertising, and then there's another marketing account. And then in payroll, you've got your call center people. So now when we're trying to figure out, well, what is your actual marketing cost? We got to go to three different places to get it. rather than organizing it in a way where we can just go to one place and understand, okay, here's what we're really spending. And so, yeah, it's really shocking that this GPS that, as you're referring to, a good analogy too, by the way, I like the car thing. Yeah, they don't have the GPS to help them make the decisions they need to make in their business, the right decisions, going back to what we first talked about.
Yeah, well, perhaps maybe even staying with that analogy, all right, and to bridge it off of what you're saying. There's a lot of listeners to this podcast that might say, well, I don't know if that really applies to me because I do look at my P&L every month.
Yeah.
I do have a GPS, but I would call in the question, how is it calibrated? You know, meaning, you know, if east is west and north is south, now you got a compass, but it's not working. And, you know, something's broken in it. And most people's P&L, and we know that just through years of experience, and even most recently, playing a business coach to a lot of these companies, that these P&Ls are all completely discombobulated. And people generically think, well, here's my P&L. How do you know it's correct? Well, my bookkeeper pulled it. What do you mean? There it is. And they have no idea how it should be engineered in terms of, I say engineered, meaning how it should be organized, the chart of accounts, how it should be categorized and what have you. And consequently, you know, we see owners, and they do this with the most sincerity, right? Meaning they're not disingenuous.
No.
They're saying, okay, Mark, honestly, my marketing cost is only 5%. And then after working with us for a couple of months, we reorganized the chart of accounts and grouped things in the right category, we find out that our marketing cost is really 17%.
Yeah.
Is that good? Is that bad? No, it just means that things have been repositioned in such a way that now you got the right optics. You know what you're managing in this bucket, in this category.
Yeah.
And the same could be said, for instance, gross margins, right? Now, not net margins, your bottom line net profit, but there's this thing called gross margins, which is what's left over after your labor and material costs, right? How much does it cost you to put a window into the hole, okay? And what's left over between that and the contract price? That's your gross margin. And most people in the industry are somewhat familiar with that term. And what determines that gross margin is your pricing model, right? Now, what then determines whether your pricing model is really true and accurate? Well, it's your P&L each month. And we have clients that say, Mark, Brian, I got some of the highest pricing in the industry. There's not anybody out there pricing things as aggressively as I am. And they mean that in a very genuine way. But then you look at the P&Ls, and once you go through what's called job costing, and we take all the corrective action to, you know, fix the P&L, we find out that there are gross margins where they thought were perhaps like 60%. Or 65% are only 40%.
Yeah.
Crazy, right? It's and it's very revealing and eye-opening to get the business at its core structured the right way with calibrating, we'll call it that, GPS, getting their scorecard for the owner set up the right way. And then from there, boy, it opens up a whole new world for those owners. It is just so invigorating because now all the stress goes away.
Yeah.
All right. All the, you know, their business is less of a grind because they feel more in control of it because they got that P&L, that GPS that says, hey, I know where I'm going. This is my roadmap. This service is my guide to make the right decisions. Because that's how we started this podcast, is how do you go about making a right decision? All right. How do you run a successful business? You make more right decisions than bad decisions. Well, how do you make these right decisions? Well, I know when to turn right, when to turn left. And that's financial statements tell you that.
Yeah. And with what's starting to happen in the industry, and I don't want to, you know, my intention is never here to go negative. My intention here is always to tell the truth about what's going on and help you guys, the listeners, make more money and be more successful in your business. And so with things kind of starting to slow down, I'm not sure if you guys are feeling it up there. I'm hearing it on a daily basis. Leads have slowed down. And so that's part of the reason why I did that podcast recently where I talked about, okay, here are the four things I believe you've got to really get focused on in order to, as things are normalizing, you know, slowing down means we're going back to the way things were pre-2016. You know, there was a time there, and you and I, and you've been in the business a little bit longer than I have, but you and I have never seen anything like what happened from the summer of 2020 until about probably the end of last year in terms of this overabundance of demand, so much demand in our industry, where people that just got into business a few years earlier, we're doing multi-millions of dollars in revenue and growth, let's just grow and more revenue. And you ask them, well, are you making any money? Well, you know, we'll make money eventually. There's a lot of excuses about, well, we're growing. Well, why are you growing? You're not making any money. Why don't you figure out how to make money? And now, you know, as things start to normalize, people don't have a grip on lead generation. So one of the things I talk about is how people were able to essentially outsource marketing to aggregators and to internet marketing companies and get plenty of leads to do millions of dollars in revenue. But you and I both know that that's not the real business. You can't rely on aggregators to drive any more than, I would say, a third of your leads. The rest of it's got to come from you being out there every day, grinding it out, making leads, finding ways to make leads.
You want to engineer your business to function effectively in the worst of times, not in the best of times.
That's right.
So, yeah. You know, when I see something like what we all refer to as the COVID rise, good for me, good for you, good for the worst players out there.
Yeah.
Like, how do you take any pride in that when you say, yeah, my business grew 35% last year? Well, so did everybody else's. All right. The real, you know, testament here or proof in the pudding in terms of how well your business is set up and stable is how does it perform in the worst of times? Now, you don't have to be pessimistic or gear yourself towards negative thinking, right? I'm always hoping for the best, but you're prepared for the worst. And every company needs to answer that question for themselves, right? I don't want to ever be subjected to the ebbs and flows of the industry, of the economy, and all these external forces, you know, like, you know, commodities, you know, pork bellies, you know what I mean?
This episode is brought to you by the Profit Workshop 2024. If you're sick and tired of working your tail off and just not making the profits you deserve, you're not alone. The truth is, low and inconsistent profitability is the dirty little secret of the home improvement industry. Let's face it, none of us were really taught how to make money in this business, let alone how to use our business to get rich. But there is a formula and a framework to do it. That's why 3 years ago, I teamed up with Mark Curry from Revelair Home to create the Profit Workshop, a one-of-a-kind two-day event where home improvement business owners transform their relationship with money and wealth by getting a deep understanding of the unique mechanics of profitability in our business. In today's uncertain economic environment, every dollar counts. If you're ready to set up your home improvement business to be permanently profitable once and for all and deposit more cash into your wealth account month after month, year after year, then this will be the most important invitation you get all year. The Profit Workshop is happening this September 10th and 11th. There, you'll discover step-by-step exactly what you need to do to achieve a 15 to 20% net profit so you can use that profit to grow your business and your personal wealth. Seating is limited, and just like past workshops, we do expect this year's to sell out quickly. So don't delay. Go to thewealthycontractor.com/profit. Again, thewealthycontractor.com/profit. In an effort to make this workshop more affordable to more contractors, this year we've slashed your investment in half. To get the best price, use discount code PODCAST24. That's PODCAST24. By the way, you have nothing to lose with our 300% better than risk-free guarantee. So don't wait. Secure your spot today. You have nothing to lose and more money and wealth to gain.
Well, it's all stuff you don't have any control over. The only thing you have control over is what you do in your own business.
That's it. You know, I want to go to bed at night and sleep peacefully and, you know, not deal with all the crazy stresses of the world. And what gives you the ability to do that, that calmness and peace, is knowing that your business, you know, is engineered to survive the worst of storms, right? If you're going to build your ship, you're a shipbuilder, and you're building it in a way that's only going to be down in the, you know, South Caribbean in calm seas, well, you know, what's that look like when you're up in the North Atlantic and you hit an iceberg, right? So I'm going to build that ship and engineer my company in such a way that it's going to survive the worst of storms.
Yeah. Well, and this goes back in part to what you said right up front when we were talking about decision-making. You started to list off a bunch of KPIs. Well, when you're tracking your KPIs, when you know what each of those numbers are, now you can make improvements. You can get more efficient with each lead. You know, we can work on, and that's one of the keys, by the way, right now, is every lead matters. Whereas, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, there were so many leads coming in. It's okay. We'll set some number of them and we'll get enough to keep going and growing. Well, that's not how this business really works. And again, when it's normalized, people like you that have been in the business for so long that are tracking their KPIs are working on little improvements to each of those areas. So how do I take a raw lead and increase my set rate? How do I increase my issue rate? How do I increase my demo rate? How do I increase my close rate? How do I increase my average ticket? How do I increase my asset recovery or rehash? All of these things are going to factor into whether or not you make money, whether or not you're going to thrive, whether or not you may survive or not survive.
Here's a good example of what you're talking about. Here's a good nugget for all your listeners. Remember, I keep referring to this P&L as like a GPS or a compass. It tells you what to focus on in terms of prioritizing. What battle do you want to fight in any given day? Is it just a crisis of the day? The best business owners are going to know, you know, what's important to deal with and what isn't. Here's a perfect example. Everybody knows that if you can increase your closing percentage, that's a good thing, right? So here's a scenario. Your closing percentage, Brian, is 30%, all right, in your company. If saying you own a home improvement company and you have the option of, again, door one or door two, you can increase your closing percentage by 10%. I'm going to be the genie in the bottle and I'm going to grant you this gift. If you increase your closing percentage by 10%, you go from 30% now up to what?
33%.
That's a good thing. Just think about how many more sales you're going to get, how much more your top line revenue is going to be. Or the genie says to you, no, Ryan, your closing percentage is going to stay the same at 30%, but we're going to raise your prices by 10%. You're still going to close 30%, but your price has increased by 10%. Which one do you want?
All day long, I'll take number two. All day long.
But I would submit to you that not everybody knows how to answer that question.
No.
Again, you don't have to be a genius. You don't have to be the smartest guy in the room to know it. You just need to, it says the answer to that question is right there on your P&L every month.
Right.
So look, if I did this, this is what happens.
Let's talk about that for a minute, because aside from lead efficiencies and getting, you know, treating every single sales opportunity with, you know, the seriousness and the professionalism that it's going to require, let's talk about P&L and margins. So I think that, and you and I have witnessed this, we've seen the proof of it, is a lot of the work that was sold during this boom time was not sold at a gross profit margin that allowed people to make the net profit that they could have made, which goes back to what that example that Mark just gave. And I knew exactly where you're going and I wanted to interrupt you, but I didn't, because I wanted people to really listen to what you were saying. Because a lot of people, yes, would take that. Yes, I just want to sell more. Let me just go sell more without considering the impact of price on that. And that's where gross margin comes in. And so let's talk a little bit about, because, you know, I think we talk about gross margin and people hear it and they think they know what it means. And look, we don't, again, we don't mean to judge anybody or insult anybody. We're here to help. That's it. Don't take anything we're saying as any sort of judgment or our egos wanting to be right. That has nothing to do with this. This is entirely about wanting to help you understand and make more money and be more successful in your business. So gross margin is critically important. Why?
Again, in simple terms, define it. If you sell windows, for instance, and it costs you, I haven't sold windows in a number of years. I used to have a company that does that. Let's say, I don't know what the going rate is, but say the labor and material fully loaded with use tax, freight, everything is $400 to put this window into the home. All right. An average, you know, 95 UI window. And forget about what your price sheet says if you're a business owner, where the retail price sheet is $1,500 and this, and then you can drop 20% and go over here another 5% and do this other thing and all that Chinese math. Doesn't matter. What matters is, what does that average contract price come in at? And I call that your target price. Now, if your target price is $1,000 and it costs you $400 of labor and material to put that window in that hole, with coil stock, caulking, the whole bit, then you have $600 left over. That's what? That's a 60% gross margin, right? Now, what I am submitting to everyone is that good, strong gross margins are the antidote, if you will, or I should say the cure to all problems. It forgives everything else. All right, because you don't know when the next customer complaint's going to occur, or a lawsuit, an employee dispute, or, you know, the building that you own all of a sudden has a, you know, an air conditioner that breaks down like ours did. We got four rooftop units, and it was a $35,000 cost to us, right, just to replace this one rooftop unit. And, I call this, you know, the shoes that will drop on you when you don't expect it. Sometimes it's when everything's going well. Other times is it feels like it's raining potatoes. Stuff that you just don't really have any control over. But the forgiving factor of all that is high gross margins. All right. It's not going around trying to pick 16 penny nails up out of your warehouse and save a couple of dollars here, being penny wise and dollar foolish. You know, have a business with a good value added selling proposition. Have the discipline within your sales force to get that price. No customer out there is ever going to tell you you should raise your price. Your salespeople are never going to get together and unify and approach you as an owner and say, I think you really should raise the price, boss. Nobody. It's very lonely. The only thing that's going to tell you to raise that price is when you look at your report card, a P&L, and you start realizing the benefit that you'll have by raising the price and get a more aggressive gross margin.
Yeah, because the gross margin, whatever's left over, that's the fuel you're going to use to, well, first off, you got to pay out of that. You didn't include the commissions, because usually you'll do that. You call it LMC, labor material commission, because those are direct costs against every single job. So now if you take your 40%, now you're down to 50%. Well, in your 50%, now you have to cover marketing overhead and make a profit. And we see a lot of people be in there, you know, they'll say, oh yeah, we have the highest prices, or we're at a 50% gross margin. And then you do the math on it, and they're really at like a 40 or 45. And then you take now you got marketing at 15%. Now you're down to 30, their overhead is 27, and then they're wondering, well, how come I'm not making any money? Well, because you only have 3 points left.
And the most important part of what you're sharing with us here on this topic of gross margins, and I mean this very adamantly, that over 90% of the companies in our industry, okay, don't know what their gross margins are.
No.
If they pull a P&L and then in any given month, they can say, no, here it is right here. It says right on my profit and loss statement, it says it's this percentage. But next month, it'll be something different. So the key takeaway here is gross margins have to be the same percentage-wise every month, 12 months a year, every year, with very little variance, maybe just less than a 1% variance. And other people's P&Ls don't do that for one reason. Now, you could prove me wrong, any listener could, but they'd have to tell me that they have bookkeepers on staff that are doing what's called job costing. Now, you notice you mentioned the word accrual versus cash accounting and what have you, and I have not, just to keep it, you know, in a very elementary, painfully simple fashion. But job costing is essentially accrual accounting. And now there may be a few people who think, oh, no, I do job costing, because we've had clients that we have coached that thought they did, but they're doing these month-end journal entries, these corrections of some sort, which is, you know, sort of like, you know, trying to fake it till they make it. And it's, you know, the companies that do job costing, on every job where they're packaging the labor material and it's being married to that revenue, and together they're being posted to the P&L in a given month, that's what job costing is. But most people have the bookkeepers are paying the labor when it's due, paying the material to their supplier the month it's coming in or the day. And then they're posting the revenue when they're receiving the money. And these different transactions are all very disjointed. And therefore, you don't have a consistent gross margin.
And this is where the difference between cash accounting and accrual accounting, I don't want to get too complicated here, but if people are in this business and they're doing cash accounting, you don't have an accurate P&L. There's just no way. It's not accurate.
We're probably coming up on the end of this session, but I would probably close on this, and that is, everybody, at least I think this way, you run your business as if you're going to sell it tomorrow, okay? And this is something that a lot of people who've already sold their business that I know, peers in our industry, people that you know, have really gotten schooled on this subject as of late, you know, because of the hotbed of private equity over the past few years in our industry. And a private equity company coming in and look at your company, they look at three things. The very first thing they do, they say, show me your balance sheet and your P&L.
Yep.
All right. Now, if they are structured in the right fashion in terms of the chart of accounts, and they look at your P&L, a trailing 12 months, and see your gross margins are the same percentage each month, the multiple on that company skyrockets. Okay. Now, if it's not, then you're talking about a company that private equity is going to do diligence for 6-7 months trying to figure things out. And if you're under a $20 million company, they tuck tail and leave. They're not going to bother and waste their time. If you're a $40, $50 million company, they might spend some time looking, you know, at trying to make sense out of your discombobulated books. Okay. So but essentially that boils down to the first thing a private equity company does, looking at a prospective company, is are they on accrual accounting? Meaning, do they do job costing every month? And then beyond that, the second thing, they're going to look at systems and processes. Show me your SOP. Show me your documented system and process for every department. And third, and least of all, is the people. Because the people are what run the processes, right? Personnel runs the processes and the systems. It's the systems and processes then that run the company, which produces the end result of a good P&L. And that's it in a nutshell in terms of how private equity values an organization, a business.
Well, and at the end of the day, Mark, what is that saying? Every day, somebody's buying your business. And most days, it's you. And so why not create a business that works for you? I'm not saying that saying quite right, but basically every day we wake up and we're buying our businesses with our time and with our sweat and with our effort. And why not make it the best that we can make it?
Well, I'm putting all the time and the sweat into building it, so I don't have to operate it, right?
You know, exactly.
Right? Yeah. So you have a business that works for you, not the other way around.
Yeah.
And the way to get there, you know, is you got to have that roadmap, you know, close out on that. You got to make the right decisions.
Right.
You know, the business you have today is the business that you deserve to have based on the decisions that you're making day to day, plain and simple.
Yeah. Well, with that, we'll wrap up here. Hopefully this was helpful for those listening. I think one of the things when I'm talking with people like Mark, I try and bring people on that I want you to listen to who they are as much as what they do. And Mark is like every other very successful person I know in this industry. They understand the ins and outs and the mechanics of how this business works. They look at details. They don't take anything for granted. And so I hope that that comes through in these conversations, is that if you want to have an extraordinary business, you've really got to get focused in on the details. And one of those details is making money. And how do you know you're making money is having a properly designed P&L, having the right gross margin, which is dependent on a pricing model, which is dependent on, you know, how you sell in the home and the value you provide, and on and on and on. Let's do a shameless plug here for the Profit Workshop. It's happening in September 10th and 11th. You get this guy for 2 days walking you through step-by-step how you make money in this business, how to properly set up your books, how to properly manage your books, how to read what those numbers are telling you, and how to make the right decisions based on that information that you're getting. There's nothing else like this in the industry, right? I mean, we've never seen anybody go into profitability the way that you and I have over the last few years. So I'd invite all of you to at least check it out, see if it's something that's valuable for you. I always say, look, you got a $4 or $5 million company and you can achieve another point. Every point to your bottom line is worth 40, 50 grand. That might be something worth spending a little bit of time to learn. I don't think you can learn from anybody better than Mark Curry. So that's our shameless plug there, Mark. You want to add anything to that?
Well, no, you said plenty of that. But, you know, just for the audience, you know, I frankly don't find too many things more boring than that of accounting.
Yeah, this is not 2 days of accounting. Yes.
It's not. I kind of would refer to myself as the master of shortcuts. I'm just a street guy. I grew up on the southeast side of Baltimore. If anybody wants to look it up, a little town called Dundalk. Had the lowest academic standards in all of the state of Maryland. And so I went through my life just navigating my way through shortcuts. Just tell me what I need to know, right? If I want to know what time it is, I don't need somebody building me a clock.
Yeah, yeah.
So I take that approach during our two-day workshop is just to keep it very practical. And I work diligently as to how not to sound like an accountant.
And you do a very good job of it. All right, everybody. So again, hopefully this was a valuable episode. I would go back and listen to it again. There was quite a bit of nuance within some of the things that Mark was talking about. So I would recommend, you know, going back, listening to it again. And if there's anything that you need help with, of course, reach out to me. If you want to check out the Profit Workshop, just go to thewealthycontractor.com/profit. And you will find all of the information you need for that. And thank you, Mark, for being here. And until next time, this is Brian Kaskavalsian, and this is the Wealthy Contractor Podcast. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. For insights on skyrocketing your home improvement business and accelerating your journey to the success, wealth, and freedom you've always dreamed about, be sure to get your free copy of my best-selling book, The 7 Secrets to Becoming a Wealthy Contractor, at www.thewealthycontractor.com. And don't forget to follow us on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. See you next time.